Welcome, everybody, to another episode of What in the World is Happening, the show about Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom. I'm Sabina Qureshi, broadcasting live from Edmonton, Canada, and with me today is Camille Laweng from New York, USA. Hi, Camille.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks, and thanks for having me on your program.
It's great to have you here. The topic today is the evolution of humanity, stepping into our divinity. And it's an intriguing subtitle there, stepping into our divinity. So I look forward to what we're going to hear from you, Camille. So let's dive in here. You have prepared this talk, and it's something that you know a fair amount about, it'd be safe to say. The very first thing you want to say is what?
Just where we get our information from.
Okay.
From the Ageless Wisdom teachings, and that is the body of ancient knowledge and teachings that contains descriptions of the universe and man's place in it. This information comes from our spiritual kingdom or spiritual hierarchy and from the Masters of Wisdom, who are members of the spiritual kingdom. These masters are the custodians of these teachings, releasing into the world for humanity, whatever teachings would be helpful to them at that given time. They're released to help bring about right human relations on Earth, and released as humanity's ready and not before it. So some of the released material has formed the core of our major religions and has also been, it's prompted our scientific and cultural advancement. There are parts that remain hidden from civilizations who are not ready, who might be hostile to the ideas. But somewhat recently, to prepare us for the time that we're living in now, some of these esoteric teachings were released to the public through these three women, Helena Blavatsky in the late 19th century, and then in the 20th century through Alice Bailey and Helena Rurick. All three of these women had a rapport with at least one master of wisdom, and each of them wrote a series of books detailing systems, cycles, and information that is beyond humanity's reach.
Well, I just want to jump in. So what's interesting about this is that the information, as you say, is beyond humanity's reach, and yet we're being asked to consider it and to have open minds. So we would like to say to anybody watching today that just come along for the ride. We're not trying to convince anybody of anything. None of this can be proved anyway at this point, but we think it's fascinating and we hope that you'll find it that way too.
Yes. More recently, Benjamin Krem, who was the founder of Share International, the organization that we're part of, he was also contacted by a master of wisdom and trained under him, developed a telepathic rapport with his master. And the information that this master gave him pertained to Maitreya and his plans to come back to public life and to work directly with humanity. He regarded himself as a messenger of this kind of information. And he gave talks and interviews throughout many countries. And he also published 18 books detailing the many aspects of this very detailed. There's a lot of parts to this information and this story about who Maitreya is.
All right. He's one of the Masters of Wisdom, right?
Right. He is the head of the spiritual kingdom.
And we'll be talking more about the Masters of Wisdom in a bit, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So evolution, what do most people think of when they hear that word?
Well, to my mind, when people talk about human evolution, they're referring to the physical body and how it has evolved over time. They think of Darwin and his theory of natural selection, which brought us an understanding of how we evolved from the animal kingdom. We think of genetics and how traits change and get passed down. And more recently, through the study of epigenetics, we've been discovering how the expression of genes get turned on and off. As interesting as all this is, it only gives us a partial picture of who we are as human beings and the evolutionary journey that we have taken. Our scientists are limited by the fossils and artifacts that they can find, our level of scientific technology, what we are able to perceive, and our conditionings, our, the way the thoughts that have been around us that we've just taken to be as matter of fact.
And one of those very basic ones is the idea that we are simply physical beings, right? And specifically, the ageless wisdom talks about consciousness and the evolution of consciousness. So yeah. I think that's one of the things that really our current scientists are in a way missing, because they're looking at the physical form. Consciousness is not in their focus.
It's not something that they are able to study with their scientific methods. Yeah, our current science is based in the three lowest levels of the physical plane. And anything above that is beyond our ability to detect and measure and study. So we can study what is solid, liquid, and gaseous matter. Above that, according to our information, are four finer, subtler levels of physical matter, which is etheric matter. Physicists recognize the presence, the evidence of something which scientists call dark matter, but they cannot detect the dark matter itself. Benjamin Cram has said that dark matter is actually etheric matter. So we're getting close. We're maybe one day we will be able to pinpoint and study dark matter.
Well, I think according to what Benjamin Cremer said, he said that we will develop etheric vision, the ability to see etheric matter. That's at some point in the future. I mean, we're talking generations ahead. So I'm guessing at that point, dark matter will become somehow visible to us, or we'll be able to perceive it.
It'll be interesting to see how that happens and how that unfolds.
Absolutely. I'd
be interested to learn about etheric matter from the scientific studies.
Well, and just to put this into one type of context, most of us have heard of E equals MC squared, where E is energy, M is mass, C is the speed of light, and squared, that is the speed of light times the speed of light. So this equation developed by Albert Einstein basically tells you that if you take solid matter and you speed it up fast enough, it's energy. It's no longer solid physical matter. And that's just confirming what esotericists or people who study the ageless wisdom teachings have always said, which is that everything is energy.
And human beings are energy, and we're actually comprised of levels of energy above the physical plane. We are matter and spirit.
So tell us about this, about these other levels above the physical. So I see there on the little, on the bottom in the line where it says physical, you can see that very small chart. That's the one we were just looking at.
Seven. Those are the subplanes of the physical. So this chart shows something called the cosmic planes of existence. And so these are bands of matter and spirit in gradations. So above the physical plane is the astral plane, which is made up of astral matter. And this is where our emotions come from. Above that is the mental plane, which can be divided into the higher and the lower mind. The lower mind being concrete thought and reasoning, and the higher mind is abstract thought and intuition.
Can I just jump in? Because what you just said about the astral plane, that's where our emotions are. So does that mean our emotions are actually a type of energy? Something that, you know, I'm guessing we can't necessarily, I mean, we can feel each other's emotions. We're sensitive to it. But it's not something that we consider a substance, you know, that we could like put into a jar or something.
It's not a substance in the sense that of the physical substance that we know. It is an energy. It is an energy because everything is energy. It's referred to as astral matter. So it is a form of matter.
type of matter.
Yeah. That makes up, that comprises our emotions.
And I see you've got the word causal there.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Yeah, can you explain what that means?
I will try, yes. So the mental plane can be divided into four subplanes. Mm-hmm. And the highest subplane of the higher mind is called the causal plane. And this is where our soul resides, at the highest level of the mental plane.
Okay. And so, but above that, even, I see four more planes. So that means the soul is not the be all and end all. There's more.
Yes. So the physical, astral, and mental planes are the ones that we are familiar with, that we have experience in our everyday life and work with. Above that are planes of finer and subtler matter of higher rates of vibration. And these planes are beyond our physical plane experience. But some of the qualities are named here, such as love, wisdom for the Buddhic plane, and will for the Atmic plane. Above that is the monadic plane. And this is where the spark of God resides.
So what is the spark of God? What is that?
Some religions, belief systems refer to a spark of God or the fire, that something that is within us all. This is us at the spiritual level.
So you're saying we
are sparks of God. Human beings are individualized sparks of God at the monadic level. And that is where our spiritual side is.
And so the divine, which is above monadic, what's that then?
That is the purest level of spirituality.
So would that be like the God, if you want to think of God as, in whatever way you want to think of God, that would be where God, out of which...
That might be a good way to think of it.
And you said earlier that the masters of wisdom, you mentioned them in relation to love, wisdom.
Yes. Yeah, we mention it a little bit later, but the masters are at their consciousness is at the Buddhic level of love, wisdom.
And just looking, one last thing I want to say before we carry on here, when we look at higher mind and lower mind, I think all of us have experience of both concrete and abstract thought. But mm-hmm. Benjamin Krem has said that our current science and medicine, for example, these are all results of the work of the mental planes, mostly
mind.
Concrete thought. But of course, abstract thought also comes into it. Inspiration.
Yeah.
And I like to talk about the story I was taught at university microbiology class about
August Kekule,
who was struggling to understand the structure of benzene because he knew its properties, but he couldn't figure out what its structure was that would account for those. And so he was dozing off in front of the fire and suddenly saw, kind of half asleep, a serpent eating its own tail. And that gave him the idea that it was actually a ring. Benzene is a ring of six carbon atoms. And I love stories like that because they show that inspiration comes through a different type of channel.
Yeah, different from rational, this plus this and this, therefore that.
Exactly. That would be the concrete.
From a different place, yes. So I'd like to just go over the constitution of a human being. And we are comprised of these levels of these planes in three parts. And at the highest level is our spiritual side, the spark of God, as we have just mentioned. This is also called the monad or the divine self. And this is who we are essentially. We are essentially gods, little gods. At the level of the monadic plane, it is vibrating at too high a rate to go down into the physical plane. So an intermediary is created between matter and spirit. And this is our soul. The soul is at the causal plane, the highest level of the mental plane. Is the causal body. It's also called the higher self. And this is also where all of our incarnational experience and memories are stored.
Okay, so that's supposing reincarnation, right?
Yes, yes.
That we live many, many, many times.
Right. That is one of the teachings of the ageless wisdom. That's taken as a given when we talk about these things. I understand not everyone believes in it. We can't prove it, but we're just putting it out there. And so at the physical plane level, the soul creates and works through a vehicle, person who is born into the world. And this is our personality, also called our lower self. So the personality is made of a physical body from physical matter, an astral body made from astral matter. This is our emotional experience, and a mental body made from mental matter.
So basically the monad, the spark of God, cannot express itself on the physical plane. So it
vibration is just way too different between the physical, astral, and mental levels and the monad.
Right. Kind of like what we're seeing about E equals MC squared, right? About how fast things vibrate to become energy.
Right. Yes.
So the monad actually creates this reflection of itself, the soul, which is like a vehicle for it. And then the soul in its turn creates another reflection or vehicle for itself, which is what we see. We look in the mirror.
Yeah, the soul steps down the qualities of the monad, and then it's able to eventually create a connection with the vehicle. It's intermediary between matter and spirit. We can talk more about how this unfolds a little bit later if you want.
Okay, sure. Well, and I know you're going to talk about the fact that we, that is humanity, exists everywhere.
Yes, that's our information. And everything, all the life forms are on their way to becoming human, are human, or have gone beyond human and evolved into more evolved states of being. And just take a look at all these galaxies. All these dots are galaxies. Just keep that in mind.
Now, that's a lot of life out there.
Yeah.
Everything is populated by living, conscious beings. Yeah. And so I suppose the fact that, for example, when the Mars rover landed on Mars, it didn't see anybody there. So how do you account for that if we're saying that there is life there?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Our information is that the planets, including those in our solar system, are inhabited by people, but they are at the etheric levels of the physical plane. So we can't see them. We cannot detect them.
Right. And probably in some future time we will, but right now we don't.
That's what I think it is. There is a divine plan for the development of life here on Earth, which is comprised of five kingdoms. So I just want to talk about the kingdoms real quick.
Okay.
The first to be laid down was the mineral kingdom, and then from that grew the plant kingdom. From the plant kingdom grew the animal kingdom. From the animal kingdom grew the human kingdom. We got our physical bodies from the animal kingdom. And the human kingdom has been growing towards and into the spiritual kingdom.
So I'm familiar with the first four. That's something all children know about. We learn in school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the spiritual kingdom is usually something that's talked about in religion. And every religion has its own way of describing that. But the ageless wisdom teaching, how does it describe the spiritual kingdom? What does it say about that?
It is the spiritual kingdom is the custodians and the overseers of the lower kingdoms. They look after them. They protect them. They manage the unfoldment and the evolution of these lower kingdoms.
And I suppose we should
look out for
that too. We should also be doing that for the kingdoms below us. We should be looking after them. We're starting to become conscious of that.
Yeah.
And there's a growing awareness of our role and our responsibility in that sense. Mm-hmm. So now we have a timeline here.
Yes. So I'll say that our scientists estimate humanity to be between 300,000 years and 2.8 million years, depending on how they define human, whether Homo hominids, upright beings who stood upright, or sapiens, those who had developed language and were using complex tools and things like that.
Right.
Our information is that humanity began 18.5 million years ago when the energy of mind was brought to our planet. This made possible the incarnation of human souls on Earth. The first group of human souls incarnated into animal man bodies and made up the Lemurian race. The Lemurian race had the task of developing and perfecting the physical body, with the astral and mental bodies present but as yet undeveloped.
So just I want to jump in and say we're talking about spans of time much, much greater than what our current scientists envision for the history of the human race, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were saying that they think between 300,000 and 2.8 million years, and we're looking here at, you said, 18.5 million years ago.
Yeah, it's a big, big difference.
And even just this first root race or race, the Lemurians, that's already 6 million years. That's like a lot longer than 2.8 million years.
Yeah. I guess it took that long for the human form to develop and become distinct from the animal kingdom, to develop itself and the ability to speak and have language.
Right. And the kind of dexterity that we have. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at what we can do with our hands compared to most primates.
Yes.
I don't think they can play the violin, not yet anyway.
After the Lemurian root race came the Atlantean root race, whose task was to develop and perfect the astral emotional body, with the mental body present, but is still undeveloped. So over a span of approximately 12.5 million years, the Atlanteans did this so well that even today, for the vast majority of the people in the world, our consciousness remains largely centered in our emotions, our astral body.
But that's still not bringing us up to the current time, right?
Not quite. The next root race, which is actually the one we're in now, is called the Aryan root race, which has nothing to do with Hitler's use of that word, which he took and twisted it. This term predates Hitler. And everyone alive today is in the Aryan root race, regardless of skin color or features. Our current task is to develop and perfect the mental vehicle. First, mm-hmm. the lower mind, and then later the higher mind, having to do with abstract thought and intuition. In our 100,000 years, that's how old this root race is, our science and our technology that we have today demonstrates the achievements of lower mind.
And just for perspective, this chart or this diagram is actually to scale in the sense that the spans of time are shown proportionally. So you can see that 100,000 years is very short compared to these two past root races, the Lemurian and the Atlantean. Mm-hmm. And in fact, 100,000 years is 0.1 of a million. So that's where we are now. And of course, this is going to continue. We have to continue developing our mental vehicle. We're not at any kind of finish line yet for that, right?
No, we've got plenty to do. Yes. But yeah, this, our goal is to perfect the mental vehicle. And that means having control of our thoughts, the ability to use thought, the ability to concentrate and mm-hmm. focus will increase.
Right. And lots of things like the ability to know the difference between assumption and something that we have some type of, I don't know what you'd call it, objective confirmation of. But you know, I think we're a long ways from that still. And there's something that you mentioned earlier, talking about the difference between now, our current state, how far we've come, and where we were at during the Middle Ages, right?
Yeah, this is comes from a quote from Benjamin Cram. He actually said that an average educated child of 14 years old today has the equivalent consciousness of a scholar from the Middle Ages.
Well, that kind of blows my mind.
Very interesting. And it's those kinds of little bits of information that made me interested in the subject of evolution and wanting to study it more.
Right, because if you talk about a scholar from the Middle Ages, what Benjamin Krem says is that that would be equivalent to somebody who nowadays has a PhD, who's gone to sort of the highest level of our current academic system. And so if nowadays a 14-year-old child who has an education has the same mental level as one of these scholars from the Middle Ages, a few hundred years ago, not that long ago, that means that the whole human race has really moved on a lot, very quickly.
Throughout a journey, all this time through the root races, humanity has always had the help and guidance of the masters of wisdom that form our spiritual kingdom or spiritual hierarchy. These masters of wisdom are people who have evolved from the human kingdom. They have gone ahead of us in evolution. They've learned all the lessons that the earth has to offer and no longer need to incarnate as physical human beings. They are also known as the Lords of Compassion or our Elder Brothers. They know and work within spiritual laws that we don't know or don't work within, and they are harmless. They don't accumulate karma, negative karma anymore. They don't cause it. And as one of the spiritual laws, they do not infringe people's free will. And having mastery on the physical, the astral, and mental planes, their consciousness is now centered at the Buddhic level of love and wisdom. And this is the plane of true intuition. On this plane, the oneness of all things can be directly perceived. We have 63 masters in connection with the overseeing of human evolution in the lower kingdoms according to a divine plan.
Okay, and you're going to explain where this plan comes from, right?
I will try to, yes. The planetary logos is an entity that ensouls our planet. It's a great being of unimaginable advancement, way more advanced than the masters.
Benjamin Krem said that the difference between a master of wisdom and the planetary logos would be equivalent to the difference between an animal's consciousness and a master of wisdom.
Yeah, that's very good illustration of the differences. So the planetary logos provides the plan of evolution for this planet. And the spiritual kingdom serves the plan and helps to make it into a reality, to bring it about.
So you're basically saying the masters of wisdom, to the degree that they understand the plan, they try to help make it come about.
They help bring it about.
Okay. And when you and I talked about this earlier, you explained to me that the planetary logos is, in its turn or his turn, I don't know if you can use those pronouns, is working out or helping to work out the plan of the solar logos, whose right. body of manifestation is the entire solar system.
Correct. Yes. And so all the planets in our solar system have a planetary logos. They have their own and they all cooperate with the solar logos.
And you said that even beyond the solar logos, at the level of galaxies, the same thing applies.
The galactic logos. So the solar logos, logi, all of them, they serve the greater plan of a galactic, divine plan from the galactic level, which we can't even begin to imagine what that entails.
So we really are like little atoms in these great bodies.
Yeah. I would like to say that since the spiritual kingdom is helping to bring about the plan, the divine plan, the masters would live among humanity in the Lemurian and the Atlantean times to teach and influence us directly along beneficial lines.
So they used to live with us.
They used to live amongst us. Mm-hmm. This changed at the end of the Atlantean period when there grew a divide between those who were listening to the masters and following the spiritual path put forward. And those who had become enthralled by materiality and greed that was brought about by the development of their emotional bodies and the development of desire, a war happened between these two opposing sides that culminated in the sinking of Atlantis and the withdrawal of hierarchy of the spiritual kingdom from direct contact with humanity. Since then, the spiritual stimulation from the spiritual kingdom has continued, but has been more indirect, with the masters working from remote desert and mountain and mountainous locations in the world.
And so my understanding is that they have been working through people who we would call disciples, people who are able to receive inspiration from the masters. And some of them we all know, for example, Jesus of Nazareth, and what he received, the teaching he received, became the New Testament. And for example, Muhammad also was a disciple of the Masters of Wisdom. And in fact, he was a disciple of the Master Jesus. So, and the teaching he received became Islam, you know, mm-hmm. the body of teaching in the Quran.
Yes, that's one of the ways that the masters, they help to bring ideas into the world. The masters also manage the energies that stream onto our planet to protect and stimulate us towards growth and unfoldment. That's a big part of their job. And the masters also place ideas onto the mental plane that would advance life on Earth. This is another thing that they do. So at the level of the Buddhic plane that they're on, the mental plane is just below it. So they drop ideas in onto that plane. And then advanced sensitive people can pick up on the idea and then try to bring it into the world. And so this is how inventions and artistic movements and expressions have come about, social movements, cultural directions, they've come about in this way.
So in a way, what you're saying when you talk about that is that people pick up these ideas, maybe similarly to how your radio picks up a broadcast, depending on which frequency you turn the dial to?
Yeah, if the person's mind is tuned into the level where these ideas are, then they're able to get it. It could just be like a flash of inspiration, as you've suggested before, could be enough to bring about the invention of something.
Yeah, and that would explain why you can have people in different parts of the world inventing things, the same thing at the same time, even though they haven't spoken to each other. They haven't transmitted the ideas back and forth between them.
But right. Yeah, it doesn't matter the location. And, you know, you've mentioned E=mc². Mm-hmm. My understanding is that that idea was intuited by Albert Einstein. He didn't arrive at that by rational thinking. Mm-hmm. It just came to him.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it's such a, I mean, at the time it was such a preposterous idea. It really revolutionized things.
Yeah. So in regards to the human evolution, the physical form is almost complete, with the exception of etheric vision, which will eventually develop and become a commonplace. Over time, more and more people will be born with it. And as more and more people speak of what they see with their etheric vision, these etheric levels will gradually come to be accepted. At this point, evolution is mainly about expanding our consciousness and our growing ability to express our spiritual side while we're in physical form.
And can I just say, you mentioned earlier that there was this great kind of battle back in Atlantean times between people who were pulled into sort of the desire principle and became very materialistic, and those who were still trying to follow the teachings of the Masters of Wisdom. Mm-hmm. So, when you talk about this our ongoing attempt, I guess, to express the qualities of the soul in our lives, I am guessing that this kind of struggle sort of is still there. I mean, we're still...
Yeah, it's like a little mini war within each one of us to...
Yeah.
Between us, altruistic, spiritual ideas, promptings, impulses, and the ones that will keep us comfortable and safe and give us pleasure.
Right. And so when you talk about this process and you refer to control over the lower self, that somehow we have to get to the point where that something in us takes precedence over our physical appetites or our desires or the illusions that we might have in our mind. Like there has to be something that becomes stronger than all of that, right?
Right. These are things we have to overcome mm-hmm. on our evolutionary path in order to advance to the higher levels. In order for these to happen, the personality and the soul must have established contact between each other. That has to be built. Mm-hmm. And it has to be built with effort. It actually takes a long time before the personality, the vehicle, even starts to respond to the spiritual promptings of the soul. There are hundreds and thousands of lifetimes where the personality just goes about in the physical world without, you know, responding to the soul, but just living as a person concerned with self-preservation and safety and pleasure and all the things that it can see.
Just from the way you're describing this, I get a sense that the distinction between, like if we wanted to say, well, which one's which, the impulses of the soul would be towards, for example, helping others or mm-hmm. or seeing ourselves as connected with others mm-hmm. or part of others, while the personality or the lower self would be concerned more with
the
just
self.
Wanting stuff for itself.
Yeah, concerned with itself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's an instinct, you know, survival instinct. But I think in order to survive at this point, we need to evolve into a more unity-oriented mindset where we start to see ourselves, humanity, as one and not fighting against one another, but joining together something greater than some of the parts.
Yeah. Well, and I think that we're seeing that. I mean, we're really seeing in the world more and more people thinking that way and calling out for that type of approach, whether it's in politics or business or education, right?
Yeah, this idea is starting to take hold and being repeated more and more. So I think it's gaining traction. It's an idea whose time has come. It's one of those ideas that's probably been floating around in the mental plane for a while, and more people are trying to bring this idea about it and make it a reality on the physical plane.
And you talked about this inner battle that maybe each of us are engaged in on some level. And I recall when we talked about it earlier, you brought up the word friction.
Yeah,
friction.
Yeah, this friction brings about the expansion of consciousness. As we struggle to either reconcile these opposing impulses or choose which impulse to go with.
And so what can we do to help ourselves in the process of evolution? Things that we can do to sort of speed it up, if you will, because the Ageless Wisdom teaching says that we're all evolving all the time. Like it's a natural process. It's something that's taking place regardless whether we even want it to or not. It's taking place. Mm-hmm. But we can make it faster.
We can make a conscious effort to speed up our evolution. And the best ways to do that is through meditation and service. Meditation is what strengthens the connection between the soul and its personality. In fact, when the soul sees its personality reflection starting to respond to its impulses, it will try to bring the person into some kind of meditation to increase that connection and make it more reliable.
Right. And in fact, meditation builds a bridge between your physical brain and your soul, right? An energetic connection. Service? Why is service important?
Service helps the person to develop the positive traits that reflect the nature of the soul and helps to improve conditions in the world.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So these are two, and you know, everyone is different. We're all born with different innate abilities and interests. So mm-hmm. there are all kinds of ways that one can be of service in the world. You pick the one or a few that line up with your interests and your abilities and make use of your lifetime here.
Right. And we're just about at the end of our pre-recorded broadcast right now. And we'd like to mention transmission meditation, which combines meditation with service. This is something
very
that,
potent.
Yes, very potent. And we, on our broadcasts, we always talk about transmission meditation. There is a lot more material that you can look at, videos on the Share International channel on YouTube. You can go to share-international.org for a lot of information. That website is very extensive. And you can get downloads of books on share-ecart.com. And in fact, there are 4 books that are available for free download. So you could start reading right away if you find this compelling and interesting. So I want to say, Camille, thank you for being here today. It was a real pleasure to talk about this with you. And I believe you have a lot more that you want to share, so we will be coming back to do a part 2. And to those of you watching, if this information resonates for you, please share it widely. And just so you know, we have dozens of episodes you can watch
at What in the World is Happening Now
on YouTube and also on Share International Canada on Facebook. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you next time. We're going to go on to meditation now. For those of you who'd like to continue doing that with us, I will start by saying the great invocation so we can all join in. So Camille, thanks for being here today. I understand you're not going to join us for the meditation, right?
No, I got pets in my room.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you next time.
Yes, I'll be glad to do it. And thanks for having me.
I'm going to simply go on to describe a little bit about transmission meditation for those who'd like to continue with us. So I'll go ahead and do that. It's a very simple meditation that is done in groups of 3 people or more. It's not a solo meditation. And the format is extremely simple. We begin by saying a mantra called the Great Invocation. We say it aloud together in unison. And once we've said it, we put our attention here on our forehead at the Ajna center between the eyebrows. And if you've never done this before, you can just touch this spot with your fingers to feel what that feels like from the inside of your head. And once you've felt it, then you simply return your attention to that spot whenever you notice that it has gone away. As long as your attention is centered here on this spot, you are in the meditation. And the way to help yourself bring your attention back is by sounding Om mentally, not with your voice, because you don't want to ground it on the physical plane, but in your mind. And that's how you can connect to the meditation if you disconnect, which happens to most of us. It's fairly common. And the next part is simply to explain that there are a few cautions. If you have a pacemaker or serious heart problems, you shouldn't do this meditation because the energies are fairly strong. Also, if you have any emotional or psychological imbalances, it's best not to. And also, if you're younger than 12, because your chakras haven't stabilized yet, this meditation is something that is done in conjunction with the Masters of Wisdom, who help us by sending energies, spiritual energies, through our chakras. And we benefit from that, but actually we're helping them in a very great work that they do, which is to make those energies available to humanity. And so why is our presence a help? It's because since we are in physical bodies, which are vibrating at a lower rate, as those energies pass through our chakras, they automatically get lowered to a lower frequency. And once they're on that lower frequency, they can be absorbed by the mass of people. And so in this way, we help the masters by making those energies available. Whereas if the masters just send the energies as they are, out into the world, the most people can't absorb them, so they aren't actually able to help. And the other thing is simply that we are doing this, as you know, because you're here with us today, we're doing it over Zoom. In the past, people used to meet in person, in someone's home, in a bookstore, but now we do it like this, and there are links. And so I guess the next thing is simply to begin. I'm going to say the Great Invocation aloud, and please join me, everybody, and we'll say it together, although I won't hear you, but I'll know that you're saying it. And once we've said the Great Invocation, then we'll sit and hold our attention on the Ajna Center and meditate for half an hour. And that's really the whole of it. And I look forward to seeing everybody again. All right, I think it's time to begin. So I'm going to go ahead and begin by saying the Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
If you'd like to continue meditating, please pause the video now. And now we're going to show you three clips from part two of The Evolution of Humanity to whet your interest. The first one is about two laws, the law of reincarnation or rebirth, and the law of karma or cause and effect. The second one is about the stages of human evolution in terms of the initiations that all people go through at the end of their incarnational experience. And the third one is about the transition we are now in, between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius. These are three major themes in part two of our program about the evolution of humanity. And part two will be coming your way in 2 weeks. So we hope you'll join us again to continue the conversation.
We'll continue here with the two laws that help to propel evolution. So we have the law of rebirth or reincarnation and the law of karma, or cause and effect. So because it takes such a long time for the soul to establish contact with and gain control over the threefold personality, we need a lot of time to do this. And so we incarnate over and over again, hundreds of thousands of times, according to our information. And gradually we evolve, we gain experiences, a wide variety of experiences. We learn skills and abilities. And we have over 8 billion people alive in the world today. We reached 8 billion sometime in November of last year. It's wow. Pretty staggering.
Yeah.
This slide shows 5 initiations. These are great expansions of consciousness that each person must go through to complete the journey in the human kingdom. So these initiations take place during the final several lives of the person's journey. So I'll explain the first initiation. This involves having gained an advanced amount of control over one's physical body, which we developed and perfected over time during the Lemurian root race that lasted for the first 6 million years of our time here on Earth. So this means that the appetites for the body, for eating, drinking, sex, sleep, and rest, these must no longer dominate the person, but must be done in moderation and under control of the soul. So we have approximately 800,000 people who have taken the first initiation. But in addition to that, there are a few million more people who are getting close to taking the first initiation.
So really, proportionally, like 800,000 compared to 8 billion is a very small number, isn't it?
It's the small fraction, yes.
So the illusions of the mental plane, that would that mean ideas that we have about reality that aren't actually true? That type of thing?
Yeah. I mean, if it's pretty easy to observe that one can take themselves down all kinds of, I call them thought tunnels, you know, just streams of thought. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts can go in all kinds of directions, and then you can believe them because you thought them, and it's, you know, based on reasoning, perhaps, but they may not be true. So it's through the light of the soul that can disperse the illusion on the mental plane of these erroneous thoughts. So another thing is that one must demonstrate an integrated personality. So your physical body, your emotional body, and your mental body will have become integrated, working, you know, together under the impulse of the soul. And it is the task of our current root race, which is the Aryan root race, to develop and perfect the mental body. So this is a work in progress. The fourth initiation, of which there are approximately 450, is called the renunciation. The person who reaches this level has increased the vibration of their body high enough so that the soul is no longer needed. The soul is then reabsorbed back into the monad, the spark of God, and our spark of God works directly through our personality. And then after that is the fifth initiation. At this point, the person has become completely free from the pull of matter.
And right. So literally our bodies are changing over time. And I recall the one concrete type of proportion that he gave was, he said that a person who's taken the fourth initiation has a body that's 3/4 light and 1/4 physical matter. And I think that's really interesting just to contemplate that as we go through our daily lives, that this process is taking place and we're actually changing, you know, literally on the level of the physical atoms.
We're also transitioning to a new age. And this is part of a cycle that occurs every 20, 100 years or so. The increments are not equal. But each cosmic age brings in energies and qualities that shape and influence the societies that are created during that time. Transitions between ages are chaotic because the old energies are diminishing. They're losing their strength, and the systems created during that time are breaking down. At the same time, it's challenging to adjust to the new energies coming in and to create systems that reflect the qualities of that new age. So we are leaving the age of Pisces, which has given us some very important qualities. Individuality, idealism, and devotion are not qualities that we had 2,000 years ago. We didn't really think for ourselves, but that has changed. And this has become a big step for us collectively